What is up, Podheads? Episode 144 of the Potty is Late podcast. We're back. We're doing it again. We're nerding out. We got cool conversations for you. I am here with Anthony and Nate, as always. How you guys doing?
I'm good. It's kind of a relief, like, not having to intro the episodes. Like, what do we have? Rob last week, right?
Yeah, Rob did last week.
And then Spose did it, like, 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We outsource, not only outsource the content, we outsource, like, the legwork. We outsource the intros.
You know what? We should just start doing that more often. Let's just ask friends to send us videos of intros, and they can just be our intro every week.
Yeah, it takes the pressure off. You get a little stage fright. I do sometimes, you know, not going to lie. But hey, yeah, if they want to, if our guests want to intro for us, fuck yeah, dude. Why not? You know, make it their podcast. They could be a friend of the, they're already a friend of the pod.
Mm-hmm. Greg's done it a couple times, or his son. Times. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, yep.
But yeah, we had a good one for you tonight. We had a conversation with Jeff and Cody of Sunsleeper. If you remember back on episode 141, we talked about great album closers. And Twan, you were really the driver of showing Nate and I the way on Sunsleeper. But you brought Thief, their closing track from the most recent album, While You Can, that just dropped a couple months ago, to that episode. And then we're like, let's see if they want to talk. So they were able to, and we did it tonight, and it was fucking badass.
Yeah, man. That's what I love about this podcast is, like, honestly, like, pre-pod, like, if we vibed with an album, honestly, with me personally, like, it wouldn't be out of pocket for me to, like, follow the band members and, like, engage with them. With this podcast, anything's possible, right? So you vibe in an album, you want to chat with the member, you fucking hit them up. And that's what happened, right? Like, we hit up Jeff, and it was kind of two for one, right? We got Jeff and Cody, so it was a bonus. Like, that, I mean, how many times have we had a couple members of a band on the pod?
Only a couple times. Yeah, Seth only a couple and Sean time. A couple times. The guys from Out of Service tonight. And, yeah, I can't, I'm sure there's another one I'm missing, but not a lot.
Yeah, and that's what I love about the pod. That's what I love about this, is, like, no one's off limits. Like, everyone's accessible.
Except for Gavin Rossdale.
That's right. We did hit up. Let's shout out the new album.
I agree, man. And I actually love it because there's no bullshit. Like, you have to be fully invested. Like, you got to do your homework. You got to listen to all the records. You got to do a little digging on their upbringing and then be ready for the interview. But then all of a sudden you're like, I already like the music, but now I'm more of a fan because I have kind of a better blueprint of this artwork. So yeah, the silver linings of the podcast are pretty much limitless. So there's one thing, though, when you brought this band to the front and center for us three, like you said, for me and Tone, like, it's, there's a little, not jealousy, but there's a little bit of like, ah, fuck, you're the cool chef that brought the bacon wrapped scallops to the table. Like,
yep.
Fuck, dude. Like, this
I wish
is
that
one
was
that,
me.
Like, yeah, well, I wanted
well,
to be
Nate,
the one.
Hold up. You're the king of food analogies. You remember in that 141 episode, I presented my options as, you know, like a menu. Totally. And we all agreed Sunsleeper was the avocado toast. Remember?
Totally.
Because they were the appetizer, the new band, the up and comer,
band,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Timeless, healthy.
They're going to be the main course before long because they are talented as fuck. So go check out the new record while you can. Go listen to this conversation with Jeff and Cody right now first. And yeah, hey, hit us up if you liked it. Hit them up if you liked it, because they're really cool, and you should definitely, definitely listen to Sunsleeper.
All right, we're here with Jeff and Cody from the band Sunsleeper. Guys, how you doing?
Doing well. Oh yeah, thanks for having us.
So the listeners can't see, but you guys are what looks like in a car with a backdrop of a astronaut with some type of a lily pad landing spot. I don't know. You'll have to describe it, because I can't.
I like to think that those are cosmic mushrooms, and we're just soaring through.
That's amazing.
That's what I saw. Yeah,
absolutely. we're big mushroom guru guys, so you know, we thought it would only be fitting to soar through this podcast with you guys.
Our
fungus guru teachers.
That's great.
I mean, this is gonna be a trip, man.
So Jeff, when we reached out to you. You guys to do this podcast, you were out with the band All Get Out. So you alluded in the DMs that it was a crazy tour. So like, we want to hear about it. Like, what was so crazy about it?
Yeah. It was just mostly crazy for me, just the scale of it. It was 0 to 100. I mean, Sunsleeper's done some pretty cool tours, but this tour specifically with All Get Out, we were opening for Matt Mason, who he's a big timer, you know. I think he's Grammy nominated. He's had songs on the radio, songs with Lana Del Rey. So just playing for his crowds was a completely new experience for me. And then, yeah, just getting to play with All Get Out in general was incredibly humbling and exciting for me. I've been a band of All Get Out, or a fan of All Get Out, for about before the season came out. So it was really cool to get to play songs with them that have meant a lot to me in the past. So yeah, it was just a lot to, on top of the fact that I hadn't really done much touring since, truthfully, since before the pandemic. Sunsleepers did a week or so with The World is a Beautiful Place in 2021. Mm-hmm. And then I think that's about it. So it was, you know, the first tour I'd done in a year, and to be on that scale with my first time really filling in for a band. So it was just a crazy experience, and I really enjoyed it. And shout out Nate. He's the sweetest person.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Not me. Well, Nate, is he the one that gave you guys a call? Is he the one that brought you on the tour?
Yeah. Yeah. So Nate, the singer, he produced Sunsleeper's first EP and our first LP. So we've been friends for quite a while. So yeah, he hit me up when they needed a fill in. And I was like, yeah, tell me when and where. I'll clear my schedule.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're the second band we've had on this year, I think, that has a connection with Nate. Because we had the guys from Out of Service back on earlier this year, and I think he was on one of the tracks and produced a decent amount of it, if not all of that record that came out earlier this year. So in good company with you guys.
Yeah, shout out Teebs.
Yeah, you know Teebs? Nice, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody knows Teebs, man.
So if you listen to that album closers episode, you probably heard about how we kind of stumbled upon you guys. Like, I was listening to Spotify and they curate the playlist, and I kind of backtracked. I was listening to a lot of probably Movements, and I was listening to a lot of Citizen and stuff, and they threw Break a Berry at me, and I was like, who is this? Like, I need more of this. And I'd heard the name, but that was the first time I'd heard you guys. So hey, Spotify's working overtime for you guys.
Yo, appreciate it, Spotify. Shout out. Yeah, for whatever reason, Spotify loved Break or Berry. Like, that was literally the first song we ever dropped. Like, that was, it wasn't like a real single, but it came out before that EP came out, which was our first EP. So technically the first song that we ever released. And yeah, it's just been in that algorithm. We get that a lot, Break or Berry. And I'm like, dude, show them the new stuff.
Right.
We made that album in 2016, man. Show us the new stuff. But we'll take what we can get.
Well, and it's such a 2022 way to find a band too, but true, it sends you down this kind of rabbit hole, especially when you're listening to something that you're into, and then the album ends or the playlist ends, and then they offer you something else. And sometimes, like we said in that episode, sometimes they nail it. And in this case, for all three of us, obviously Tuan found him found you guys and brought you to us, but I've been listening to you guys nonstop for the last couple of weeks too. So,
oh yeah.
It worked. It actually worked. The algorithm worked. Sometimes it does.
Appreciate that. That's amazing. We love to hear that. And thanks for listening, y'all. I mean, it means a lot. It's cool that we caught your ear.
Yeah, it's funny how it works. Sometimes I'll listen to my Discover Weekly and I'm like personally offended. It's like, what are you doing to me, Spotify?
Who do you think I am?
Right? Yeah. But every once in a while, it sends you gold.
So if you guys are up for it, like, we're from the Northeast, we're all from Maine, and I'm kind of naive to Salt Lake City. Like, here's what I know about Salt Lake City: SLC Punk. So like, that's, who knows if that's accurate? That was 20 years ago. A band I love on Rev, Iceburn, is from there. Certainly the politics, but like, what was it like for you guys? Because to me, it doesn't scream like a place conducive to starting a band. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like specifically at the time that we were kind of getting Sunsleeper going, it wasn't a hub of any kind of culture specific to what we were doing. It was very small, still is small. We call Salt Lake Small Lake City because everybody knows each other. But yeah, it didn't make a lot of sense to start making the music that we ended up making here. But we're just being true to ourselves, I guess, and didn't really care if it made sense or not and just went for it. But I'd say now, right now, specifically, Utah is underrated as far as the music scene goes. Salt Lake specifically, it's a hub of a lot of talent, a lot of talented people, a lot of hungry youngsters. Yeah, I would recommend not sleeping on Salt Lake right now specifically. A lot of cool bands.
Do you think that's a result of the pandemic, like a migration from other markets, or is that kind of, you know, very organic Salt Lake City people starting bands and artists and whatnot?
It's kind of hard to pinpoint. Definitely saw an influx of younger bands starting up post-pandemic. I feel like that's kind of a universal thing everywhere. Probably felt that, but I just feel like having been in the scene a decent amount of time, even before Sunsleeper, all of us were playing shows together in our old bands, different genres. It's just been a slow but steady motion in the right direction is what I would say. Less clickiness. Maybe that could have been holding back in the past. I feel like Salt Lake was maybe a little bit more clicky in maybe the 90s, or, you know, I mean, everyone knows Salt Lake for the straight edge, kind of the toxic straight edge stuff that was happening at one point, which, shout out, like Snake Eyes now, like there's a lot of really cool straight edge bands that don't have that toxic mentality in Salt Lake. That's kind of a thing of the past. So I don't know, maybe people just being more open-minded and a little bit more able to be friends with each other as opposed to, I don't know, scarcity mentality. But either way, whatever the answer is, we're thankful to have a thriving and exuberant and young scene right now in Salt Lake. I'd say check out, if you like our kind of music, check out a band called World's Worst. They're the homies, and they make incredibly cool indie rock, kind of 90s inspired, I'd say Pavement kind of vibe, but check them out. They're going to blow up.
Nice. Dial it back a little bit. What are you guys listening to growing up in Salt Lake City, or who are you seeing for shows in Salt Lake? Are you going to like indie shows of bands that you grew up with, or are you just catching whatever comes through? Like we live in the Northeast. We grew up in Portland, Maine, the Portland, Maine area. We got like, you know, third tier market stuff at that time. So we didn't get everything. Yeah. We were just hoping for a show to come through. So what was it like for you guys?
It's not quite like that. Like there is a lot of, you'll notice your favorite band comes through, skip Salt Lake. They'll go from like Denver straight to Portland. So we get kind of miss out on some of the ones we want to see. But I feel like you kind of need to hit somewhere. You're going to the West Coast though. It's so sparse out here. So it's not as avoided. It's kind of interesting because both of us have worked for this production company here called SNS that puts on most of the shows. So we kind of, I don't know, we get to see every bands we love, bands that never heard of, bands that we would never listen to if we didn't have to work the show, but still have a good time.
Yeah, it has been cool.
Kind of spoiled that way.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who was some early bands that rolled through that you were like, all right, this is, I'm into this. I want more of this. Maybe I want to start a band.
Oh, man. I mean, Brand New will always be like the thing that got me into playing guitar. And it's funny. I saw them. I think I saw them 10 times total. Once I went to Portland, Maine. Yeah, I drove up to where you guys are to see.
Really? Oh, shit.
It's kind of ridiculous. Damn. Yeah. I spent like the day in Portland. Saw Brand New that night. It's a cool little city you guys got.
Was that 2016?
I was going to say, was that 2016?
It had to have been.
Civic Center?
We were there.
Front Bottoms, I think, played?
Yeah, so.
Yeah, we were there.
I was there with you.
Yeah. So we know each other.
Yeah, Anthony and I were at that show, too.
I'm seeing you.
That's cool.
I remember that being a very loud evening, in a good way.
That was like in Antina, right?
Yeah, it was. Like 8,000 cap. Like, even 5-10 years before that, if you told me Brand New was going to play the Civic Center, I'd be like, wait, what happened for that to happen? What the fuck?
And it to be pretty well sold. And yeah,
good turnout there.
And it's a shitty venue for a concert compared to other places we have in town, but it's the biggest one that we probably could get, so it makes sense that they were there.
So cool. I saw that tour too, but in Vegas. Yeah,
so that production company you guys are working for, is that kind of like an in for your band too, for Sunsleeper? Is that like an angle that you're able to, you know, utilize to book shows and whatnot, or is that a whole different thing?
I'm new to working for SNS, and since I've been working for SNS, not capitalized on it, but they are the I feel like the leg up into legitimate shows that aren't DIY in Salt Lake. So they've always been really nice to us. But yeah, us working, Cody worked there when, like, after the band was already going, and
yeah, was there a couple of years, I think.
And you were doing
just kind of little things, just taking tickets, and
yeah, so that wasn't like leverageable. And I do promoter rep stuff right now, and then on like festival shows, I'll do running. So I'm like picking people up and stuff. But yeah, no, just the only leg in really is just getting to go to a lot of cool shows and meet a lot of cool people. Just be around the environment, musical environment can be very inspiring. I've definitely felt more compelled being around music, you know, 5-6 times a week, as opposed to, you know, I live about 45 minutes outside of Salt Lake. So it was kind of crippling for a long time of like, oh my gosh, I would just, you know, work my day job 9 to 5 or whatever in like Utah County. And it's kind of hard to want to go up to Salt Lake, 45 minute one way, 45 minute back home, you know? So getting to work in the music industry and see shows is a huge hashtag blessing. So yeah. I'm very, very grateful and thankful for that. Yeah.
Does it, it sounds like it kind of does inform some of what you guys are doing in Sunsleeper.
Yeah. I mean, you pick up on new influences, you know, everything. We're just constantly, you know, absorbing whatever we're around, and it might come out consciously, but a lot of times subconsciously. I mean, I feel like being around more diverse musicians, you know, oh, it looks like this new album's got more of that shoegaze or indie thing as opposed to what we were doing before, which maybe subconsciously was because we've been compelled by cooler, different bands than expected. I don't know. The more you can be in arts in any shape or form, the more compelled you'll be, no matter what, if you're alive, if you're breathing.
So what's the pivot to you guys actually playing music, and like, how does Sunsleeper come to be? Because I think, Jeff, you've been there from the jump, right?
Yeah. Yeah, kind of, as I was touching on earlier, we all kind of knew each other from other bands and just being involved in the Salt Lake scene prior to Sunsleeper. I was in a band and we had two vocalists. I was one of the vocalists, and the other vocalist was kind of settling down, and I didn't want to keep that going on without them. It would have felt wrong, so I immediately kind of wanted to try and put together a new group, just didn't want to stop. I had that itch. And instead of like reaching out to the people that I was close with prior, like my old band was almost all high school buddies, I just started reaching out to people that I'd met, that I'd played shows with or saw around venues that my last band played, and slowly but surely kind of put together a ragtag bunch of people that weren't really all that close before the bands, that just were all interested in exploring sounds together. And we spent about a year and a half in the dark, just like coming up with ideas and watching it transform from a band that sounds like Super Heaven into like kind of where it landed, somewhere in the Midwest emo kind of realm. Yeah. And then over time, you know, members cycle out, and with that, different, you know, musicians bring different sounds and influences to the band that then inspire each other. And it kind of just, it's actually really, really fun to kind of be on your toes as one of the founding members still in the band, you know, having new collaborators and watching what their, you know, influences and their spin can do to shift the sound. It's been a lot of fun.
So Jeff, are you the boss? Like, does that mean you're the boss? You're the legacy guy?
Dude, you have no Sky is out of control.
No way. Gosh. How is he going? Lay it on us.
No, this guy's a great guy.
Appreciate it.
He handles things very well. One of the most articulate dudes. It's pretty wild.
Stop it.
Sorry.
Well, that's you.
Well, so Cody, how did you end up joining up?
Dude, it's crazy.
Tell the whole story, man. Tell
I wanted it to be in Sunset. Okay, so they were recording their little EP, and my stepdad, he like sells microphones and stuff for a living, and he's like, go loan these guys a microphone. They're going to be buddies. So I drive a microphone over. Sunsleeper's recording Stay the Same. I'm just like, all right, I'll hang out in the studio with you for a minute. And then I was like, I got to be this band. I heard the songs they were recording. So I ended up moving in with one of the members, my roommates for a while, and I was I don't know. I feel like I kind of weaseled my way.
That's a power move. Moving with the band, if you want to be.
Like, oh, I just happen to have my guitar here. Can I noodle a little bit with you guys?
That literally happened. Like, I at the time, the bassist of the band and I were very close. And I'd just be on the phone with him quite a bit. We were chatty Cathy's together. And I'd always hear, like, in the background, Cody's, you know, mumbling something, and then our bassist at the time saying, like, you know, Cody says let him join the band, and I was like, dude, just show up to practice, man. I was just like, yes. Just do it. Well, we'll have three guitars, and it kind of ended up sort of happening that way. Like, why not, dude? Like, just come and hang out, see if you vibe. And we
invited myself,
and it was the best thing that ever happened. Honestly, Cody, we've said it a million times. He's saved the band in many ways, but just a lot of he balances out the dynamic of the bands emotionally, and he's also an incredible songwriter. And so very, very stoked that you weaseled your way in.
That's great.
So persistence definitely pays off. You showed up, but you also got the talent to back it, which is cool. So after, you said you were kind of in the dark, which for me kind of translated as you guys were working your tails off. This is a passion project. Eventually you want to go ahead and play shows. So you did eventually play shows. What was that first gig like? I mean, you guys had been practicing forever up to that point. So
yeah, it was cool. The first show we hopped on at the time, probably the only and most iconic DIY spot in Salt Lake was called The Underground. There's been many incarnations. I'm sure that name has been used a million times across the United States.
Oh yeah.
But it's called The Underground. I think it was the third version of it, and we played with a band called Henrietta from Florida, I believe. Incredibly underrated band, very cool. We saw they were coming through, and we're like, we really need to play with them. In addition, there was a local band called Blow, who's very, very good too. I don't think they're making music anymore, but yeah, it was just very DIY, very homey. Maybe 50 people there. Like, it's kind of where we started. I say it all the time. We're still like the most DIY band that no one considers DIY, but yeah, we have very, very rooted in the DIY, and that show is like a perfect introduction. You know, everyone welcomed us that was there with open arms, and we made some good friends and kept playing shows with Glow for a minute and went until they stopped playing shows. Yeah, I just remember the energy being great, and also just, I don't know, just like it was an overwhelming feeling to work on something for a year and a half and finally like see it actualized. It was very cool. You know, we just kept it rolling from there as much as possible. There's nothing like live music, man.
We totally agree with you there. I mean, yeah. We've chronicled that now for almost 3 years. A lot of times we pivot back to, let's talk about a live show, because why not, right? Yeah. Like, we just love that
exactly.
Stuff.
Exactly. 100%, man. There's nothing like it. Yeah. The 2020 was rough for that reason. I don't think any of us really realized how mentally dependent we were on not only playing shows, but going to shows, being around music, being around like-minded individuals. So I'm very happy music is back and we can focus on it again.
I'm curious about the DIY thing, because at some point you guys do sign with Rude, which is obviously an indie label, but I'm curious of like what led up to, we're jumping ahead a little bit, like what led up to signing with Rude, and like what kind of ethos did you stay with?
Yeah. So when I say DIY, I mean like DIY, like buy our own, you know, van, buy our own trailer, every single like recording we paid for, like the EP and our first LP we paid for out of pocket. That first LP upwards of 15K out of pocket, you know, living completely frugally, living off of other people, like just devoting every ounce of energy and funds that we could into the band. And then like, you know, I had a desk job, and if I'd slow down at my job at the time, I'm spending time on social media trying to promote, I say that in air quotes, however that is, connect with
people,
make new
friends.
Don't worry,
they're not listening. Don't worry. They're not listening.
You know, but it's just like every waking second was devoted to Sunsleeper for many years. And I think Rude saw that grind, and I kind of circle back a little bit to Nate from All Get Out. We owe a lot to that guy. He produced our first EP and first LP. And then before we were signed or anything, he offered to take us out on our first like real tour that was us self-booking it, which we had been doing for I think 3 years up at that point, 2016, 17, and 18. We booked every tour we've done. You know, we're hopping on the local gigs just because of friends, whatever. But yeah, Nate took us out on our first real tour. And when we announced it, Rude must have seen that because I'll Get Out like co-signed with Rude. I think Rude handles like European distro and like rest of the world. And then they're signed to Equal Vision for the US. So, you know, we popped up on their radar, and we had just dropped a music video for our single at the time, Soften Up, first single off of the first LP. And Rude hit us up, and, you know, they're very friendly. They seemed to kind of have similar vision to us at the time with, you know, creative control and just being like offer us assets and tools. So they asked us to take the video down. We took it down, worked out a deal, and then they like re-released it. So like even up to that point, like all the content for You Can Miss Something, the videos, the music, we made it ourselves without anyone intervening, including label. And then even after that, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people know how labels work, but mostly they're offering, you know, a set of connections, you know, or whatever, like PR companies, but also the funds that they offer is recoupable. So it's like, it's a loan. So in my mind, it just kind of takes the burden off of us having to save up, but we're still making all the decisions on what to spend that on. And so we continue to kind of use that DIY ethic and continue on choosing what producers we want to work with, where we want to record, who we want to tour with, what kind of videos we want to release, what kind of photos we want to take, and all that kind of thing. So still nice. All very us. Just slightly love less it. Financially burdened in the moment. Yeah.
And you mentioned the first full length, You Can Miss Something and Not Want It Back is the name of it, right?
Yes.
And that came out in 2019. And you guys fully funded that yourselves?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Man, that's awesome. Because one finding while you can, which we'll get to in a few minutes here, that just came out this year. We obviously went back to do a little homework and listen to some, you know, listen to the EP and listen to You Can Miss Something and Not Want It Back, and just really kind of dug in like, wow, this is where have these guys been? I want to listen to this all the time. So all time album title too. Does that reference anything in particular, or is that going to be left for
the cutting room minds?
Yeah.
It was one of the lyrics, and we were trying to come up with a title for the album, and we went with the longest one possible.
Yeah.
That fits though. Yeah, that works.
Felt right.
Yeah, it captures you. You're like intrigued. You're like, oh, I can relate in like a trillion ways, but I don't know what they mean, but I can fucking put my thoughts on it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely felt like it was a moving. I didn't actually record any of it. That was before my time, but I feel like the album's it's a moving on album, moving forward.
Accurate. Yeah. Always trying to move forward.
So I'm curious, like, what changes? Does anything change when you guys sign to Rude? Because it sounds like the arrangement is pretty much like, we run the show, we'll leverage your connections.
Yeah, just like they give us money and we do what we do. We have to pay the money back somehow, but somehow it all works out for the better.
Yeah. Yeah, they're specifically with that first album, they're incredibly nice and open, and it made us feel quite at home and able to do whatever we wanted to do. So it was a no-brainer to work with them. And not much has changed with them. I think they have a little bit of a new team since that first one, and we have a little less correspondence with people we used to. But overall, same kind of ethic. Nice. I think they just want people to make albums. You know, like, they're not going to get involved in the creative process. You know, they reached out to bands that they believe in for a reason. It would kind of be weird if they told us what to do.
Yeah, well, times have changed, right? Like back in the day, units were being sold, you know, by the million. Sometimes in the first week, that's changed. So actually, you know, that's something they see in you as, no, we can move units. Maybe it's vinyl or something. But also the deals back in the day were like 3-album plays. Was that your contract too? Is a multi album contract or what?
Yeah, one more.
Yeah, 3 releases total with them.
Nice.
And just so you know, we call Nate Industry Nate. He loves to dig into the industry stuff. So
that's true. That's
cool. There's probably more to come.
Nate would like to know exactly how much you signed for, what the day was, when the termination is. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see a lawyer on the fine print? Did you get that, you know, a second opinion? Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Have some stuff in the works now.
I had no idea there were so many lawyers involved in rock and roll. We've had like three
too
or
many.
Something.
We have some lawyer debt.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Like DIY ethos band still has to engage a lawyer. It's just crazy. It's a sign of the times,
yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You know, we're this emo band making sad songs. We still have to pay $1,000.
Look over this contract, asshole.
Dude, exactly. It's ridiculous. The one where we still have to pay for is copyright, which still super annoying. Too much money. We would have, in their defense, would have been less money had Elvis Presley's original record label, Sun Records, not blocked us for no reason with no standing. I'm still bitter, man. Like, we were like about ready with the copyright process, which is way too long and way too expensive in the first place, and then like the last final like review, it's like, actually Sun Records has dinged it and asked you to change things, and like because they had to, like the lawyers had to go back and like adjust some terminology so Sun Records wouldn't get involved, like there's another $1,000. I'm like, dude, come on. Dude, we're not stepping on your toes.
Wait, the Sun and Sun Sleeper connection, somehow that triggered something. What, do they own the Sun?
Yeah, dude. Exactly. They literally had terminology like, you can't have any Sun depictions in your merch, or I'm just like, fuck you. Wow. On my face. We didn't change anything other than word terminology. Like, I think there was something like, we said we had to change something from whatever the word it was to streaming, because the way that it could, the implication could be that we were releasing music as an entity that wasn't our own, like a label might with the name Sunsleeper. I don't know. It's bogus.
It gets so convoluted. Like, are you using Elvis's likeness, right?
Yeah. It's crazy that you have to do that. And you're just trying to make music that you connect with and other people connect with, and it's not not about any of that. But like, whoever has the Pink Floyd records, nobody can do anything with the Dark Side of the Moon, right? Like, that's you can't ever say anything about the moon because of that. It's the same idea. It's so stupid.
Well, I was thinking of Black Hole Sun. They're after Soundgarden. They're after
too,
Cornell and his grave.
Yeah.
It's so silly. Again, no one told me that rock and roll would involve so much legal jargon. And no, we didn't even care about copyright in the name until multiple other bands almost stole it. So we're like, I guess we should probably get on this.
That
we
right,
don't
hang
have
on
to
that. Yeah.
Pull a Super Heaven and go from Daylight to Super Heaven. That would not the move. Just Super Sunsleeper.
Or a Sunsleeper AD. Just throw an AD at the end, like Shipwreck did.
Love it.
I mean, that's, you got to think of that. You don't think of that when you're coming up with stuff, right? In the moment, you're like, all right, well, we need a band name, we need a song name, we need an album title. You're just doing that as creative people. But then you have to start to think about who's going to try to take this from me, whether it be a Twitter handle or an Instagram handle. Ugh.
Oh my gosh. The worst.
There's a lot.
Well, look at our podcast name. Like, we didn't think about scaling it. You know what I mean? Like, it was never a thought.
Right? Yeah, when you're just like young and hungry and you're doing what you love and you're like, this feels right. I mean, we had so many band names and Sunsleeper was the only thing that felt remotely right. And I was done arguing with people at the time. So we're like, let's do it. And then to have someone like 8 months later drop the same name essentially with like a couple letter change was like, seriously? All right, dude.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And then I'm like, well, maybe we'll just let bygones be bygones, coexist, and then it's like, whatever, dude. I can do it for them.
Yeah.
Great musicians, just their name is too good because obviously they were inspired by the best.
There you go.
You know what the cheat code is? Is you change like letters to like different things, like V instead of a U, and numbers instead of letters. That might be
Paris.
Like,
just do a Paris.
Yeah, thing. Yeah. Blink 183, baby.
Churches.
Churches thing. All right. So you guys have been on Rude for a few years. Mm-hmm. So you signed with them in 2019. Fast forward, we're not going to talk pandemic. It's just, we've talked about that enough, and you guys are probably sick of it. So While You Can drops, when this episode drops, it will have dropped a couple months ago, back in October. So you guys work with Brett Romnes, who Tone and Nate, you can back me up. I am the biggest Prime and Stereo fan on earth.
It's true.
I've traveled 3,000 miles to see them. Biggest fan. Wow. But anyway, Brett Romness of Prime and Stereo, Avalanche, Movie Life. He produced it, engineered it. How was that working with him? Was that a good experience?
It was so cool, man. Like, we talked to so many producers, and like, we almost committed to one, but then we backed out. We wanted Brett, and thank God we did. Like, hanging out with Brett was, he did everything to make us feel comfortable. And
he's got stories for days, man. It was just a pleasure. Like you were saying, like, I'm a fan of all those bands too. And remind me to tell you something about Crime and Stereo in a second, but yeah, it was just cool to be, you know, around him and just organically have tour stories from all the bands he's been in and like bands that we love. And then like even studio stories, like, I know we already talked about Brand New, rest in peace, obviously, but
yeah, we can leave it at that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get me started, man. I'm heartbroken still. It's been however many years, but while we were in the studio, he's like pointing out like a vocal booth that was sitting just kind of in the corner, and he's all like, yeah, Jesse had us purchase that for Science Fiction, and he got in it and recorded like a couple of lines and got out and said, oh, that's too spooky, I don't want to use that, and then didn't use it the rest of the recording.
So that's where you recorded while you can, right?
Dude, I wish, man. Yeah, it's just like little things like that that, you know, super fans or people that care about the stuff that Brett has been involved in. I was just geeking out the whole time, telling us stories about all the bands he's worked with and bands he's toured with or been around at festivals. He had some crazy Marilyn Manson stories and ICP stories and all.
So all the canceled artists.
Yeah. He was free to talk about, for sure. Just a lot of fun debauchery, rock and roll shit, you know. But yeah, it was just awesome, man. He knew his stuff. He made us feel very at home. He pulled the best out of us, as any producer should, but in like the most organic way, where it didn't feel like he was pulling. It just kind of came out, and then afterwards you go, oh, these songs are a lot better than they were before we got in the studio, you know. He's really good at that.
That was actually my next question, because we've talked about producers on here with a bunch of different bands, and like sometimes like they really are just like a name and brand, and unfortunately that's all it is. And sometimes it really is pure influence on the output of, or the end result of said album. So this album is a little bit, not, we don't want to say like a departure, but it's a little more airy and dreamy than the previous work. Do you think that's a direct result of working with him or what?
A little bit, definitely his arsenal and the way he mixed the record definitely had that more spacious mix, if that makes sense. I feel like the last You Can Miss Something was a little bit more guitar centric, you know, everything kind of in your face, and this is all, everything is a little more cohesive and kind of floats together on this new record. But as far as the songwriting in that dreamier sphere, it was kind of going in that direction anyways. Again, I haven't said it on this podcast, but this was the first time that Cody was writing with us, like as a songwriter. And Matt, it was more or less his first time really writing with us for the project. He contributed some ideas that You Can Miss Something, but collective, all of us contributing to the songwriting. Even Jacob, our bassist, was writing little bits of lyrics and things like that. So just, I think our collective, you know, influence, you know, the mesh together came out a little more dreamy. But then that mix really just brought it all together, and his arsenal of pedals and whatnot. It was really fun messing so many toys.
That's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
You just walk in there like wide eyed, like, oh, we can work with all this stuff. Cool. All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He had some bongos, I think he would hide so people would know.
late night drum circle, baby.
Yeah. One of the preamps he was using, he said, was Bob Marley's at one point. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Like, actually Bob Marley's. Yes. Yeah, and the studio barbershop, like, built out of or in an old like cathedral or like church, so it's got a very cool ambiance.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
so it's like a 100-year-old church that burned down a time or two.
Yeah,
and they turned it into a multi-million-dollar studio.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I think it was a dance club for a second, and then it was the studio. Yeah. Very strange, but very cool. And there's like a lake right outside. It's very vibey. It's just a I think we recorded in October, was it?
October through November. So we spent Halloween there. We spent the election there, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, so this was 2020.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
We recorded this a minute ago.
Mm-hmm.
So how was that? You're like closed lip, like sitting on this fucking gem of an album.
Yeah.
It's weird, dude. It's very drawn out. By the time it actually came out, it was just like, okay.
Yeah.
There it goes, I guess. Right. Like, right. I've already listened to it 100 times. Yeah. So it's, wow. I'm sick of it now.
Yeah, I'd like to play it. Yeah. We got a lot of feelings about that. Yeah, circumstantially, just the way it worked out, it took a while for the mix and the master, but really what drew it out was the rollout. And five singles is admittedly a lot.
So is that the record label, or is that you guys, or is that a combination, the five
At
singles?
At the time, it made sense. Like, because we were still in pandemic mode when we started dropping singles, kind of. So the idea was, let's drop all of these songs. Can't play shows. Let's really draw out the album cycle. It's the only thing you guys got. But then by the time the songs actually started dropping, like shows were back, yeah. Things were happening. So it's like, oh no, we need to get this out now. But
yeah,
we already committed.
That's exactly it. But it happened and the songs exist. So that's all that really matters. But it would have been cool to be a little more concise. But circumstances, you know, you live and you learn.
Yeah, it's a tough call because you don't want the music to get buried and lost or have some kind of like a negative connotation with the pandemic. But at the same time, like you said, you're sitting on it, like you're kind of waiting for people to, you know, see your baby. Like, come on,
mm-hmm.
You can't be like Tool and wait 10 years.
Yeah. Upload to the Pirate Bay or something.
That's amazing. Did that ever cross your mind?
Yeah.
No, I really did send it to everyone.
I know. I was trying to keep it like close to home, and then after a certain while, I was like, "All right, dude, just listen. Tell me what you think." It's going stir crazy. Like, what is this? I need someone else to tell me what this is because I've gone through all of the stages of adoration, grieving, hating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck. Is this good? Yeah. Fuck. It's finished. But the pandemic's still going. Ah, we could start over. No, we can't. We spent all our money. Fuck.
You get it. That's exactly it.
And we mentioned the episode that we did featuring the album closers, and we featured Thief from this record. When you wrote that, did you know it was an album closer, or did you write it thinking we need an album closer?
It's hard to say. I remember I was listening to your podcast when you guys were talking about this, and I was like, I want to chime in. Now I get to.
Now's your chance. You're on the spotlight. You're on the podium.
It's funny. I was listening to the podcast and hearing you guys talk about how intentionally we wrote all the songs, the first, last, middle. And it's kind of funny because we shifted these songs all over the place before we landed where we did. Like, originally we wanted this song Quitter to be the last one, the antithesis of the but Matt really fought to be last. I'm glad he did. That's the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it could live anywhere else. And like that was kind of the spirit of the episode. It's like these don't have to be perfect songs, although I think Thief is, but they don't have to be perfect songs, but they have to be perfect for the album and they're a bookend to the album. And that's a song that I don't think could have lived anywhere else. Like if that was in, say it was track 7, like I think anything after that would have been like, you know, it would have been different, right? It would have shifted the mood of the album. And like we said, like we're late 30s. We think about the theme of that song a lot, at least I do. And it hit me. So here we are.
Yeah, you wrote that to hit people.
Yeah. It's definitely, I think, the only song that I was like legitimately tearing up while I was singing in the booth. It's also drinking a decent amount, but yeah, I was it was kind of a hard one to sing. Yeah, I think about that a lot too. Lost is scary.
That's true, man. And you're right, Anthony. We do think about that as we get a little older and have kids and have, you know, parents that are aging and all that stuff. But that's why you find music to connect to, and that's, you know, how we ended up talking to you guys, because we connect to your record that came out earlier this year. And I'm so happy that we did, because I'm glad that you're able to actually give us what it was and not us just speculating three episodes ago.
Right. Very cool. I appreciate it. I'm glad we connected. This is cool.
All right. So when we were trying to coordinate a time to chat with you guys, certainly the time zones, we're in three different time zones between all five of us. But you, Jeff, you mentioned you were going to pull Cody in because you happen to have a writing session. So are you guys writing new songs for an album? Because it sounds like you guys wrote While You Can like 3 years ago.
Yeah. It feels like it's about time, huh?
Yeah.
It's funny because we have all these, I've probably recorded maybe 40 demo ideas, and honestly, I'm still attached to a couple. I kind of want to bring a couple of those back to life in the White End era. But
that's Cody. Like,
that's me, dude.
That, you always do that. You're like, dude, I wrote this. Was it Quitter or was it Thief?
It was Porch Light. Porch Light is actually like a 5 or 6 year old song that I dragged into Sunsleep. Please.
Nice.
Chords.
And I was like, let's put a cable on it. And then I was like, oh, I think I like that. Yeah, we're writing with no real intent other than to see what happens. I mean, throughout the last 2 years, Cody and I have played around with lots of different sounds, whether they will end up being Sunsleeper, end up being a side project, or end up being something that never gets released. It's fun to collaborate together. That's how a lot, like, so when we're writing While You Can, again, pandemic, we were writing remotely most of the time. But leading up to the studio, Cody started coming over to my house, and we just drink some whiskey and mess around. And through that, I feel like we wrote some of my favorite songs on the record that we had. And at the time, it wasn't like, let's write, we really need to finish the song for the record or whatever. It was just like, let's have fun. So creating an environment to do that again is fun and exciting. And yeah, who knows what it would, could, or would be. We have a lot of diverse music tastes, and I tend to change my interests quite quickly. And so yeah, if it's too poppy or if it's too something, it might not be Sunsleeper. But we'll definitely be creating music together for a while.
Nice. Well, either way, it's practice, right? So I mean, if you're just kind of going through songs and demoing and all this stuff, either way, you're kind of prepping yourself for the road, ideally. Are you guys going on tour anytime soon, or what's going on with that?
Nothing planned. There's a possibility early next year that we might hop onto a buddy's tour, but we have not confirmed that. Trying to get our ducks in a row and, I don't know, get back on track. We're still, like, it sounds silly, but coming back from the pandemic, like, it really threw us off in a lot of ways. So many
made me have a baby.
Yeah, so. This guy's a dad now.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
He's got a house. We helped him tear it apart during the pandemic.
No doubt.
Yeah.
It threw a lot of people in your line of work, you know, through the ringer a little bit. And you're right. We're still all kind of coming out of it. It's never going to be gone, I don't think. But as far as, you know, being a little bit more normal and getting out on tour and maybe, you know, latching up on a buddy's tour or doing something like that, that's going to happen more, which we're really happy for.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Speaking for myself, that I'll Get Out tour really revitalized me for wanting to be out. You know, the older you get, touring can seem impending, but I am more on fire for it than I've ever been. I want to tour a lot. So hopefully we can get our crap together and see a lot more of us next year.
We'd like that for sure.
Yeah, if you guys roll through the Northeast, we'll be there. Have you guys played New England?
I think so. I don't think
Connecticut counts.
We played Connecticut, Naugatuck. Yeah, that's where Willaway is from. We're buddies with those guys, and they're now label mates, which is cool.
Nice.
But yeah, we played a hometown show with them at the end of one of the tours we did in 2019. That show popped off. Very fun.
Nice.
Yeah. Shout out Naugatuck.
What about San Diego? I'm down here in San Diego.
Oh no, that's so funny you should say that.
Jeff just played there and got some opinion.
Yeah, where were you, Nate? Where the hell were you?
Oh shit.
I'm originally from Ventura County, and my aunt lives in San Diego, so I'm like
nice
aware of the area and the climate. Yeah, I just played the All Get Out tour, and it was a sold out show for Matt Mason, and everyone had, like, the crowd was very positive afterwards, but, like, during both our and the headliner set, very tame and uninterested vibe from San Diego. And we're like, what is going on here? And then afterwards, like, Matt Mason's killed it on merch, and, like, I was standing at our merch and everyone's like, y'all were great. I'm like, I thought y'all hated us. Well, can you move next time?
Everyone's just stoned, man.
They just smoke in slow motion.
I believe it.
I feel like there's something to that. Like, a lot of people will stand still and just stare, but really they're really just taking it in.
Yeah.
Feeling the show. I don't know. A show is kind of a spectacle. You know?
Especially what I'll Get Out was doing.
Yeah.
Breaking our guitars.
And
yeah.
Nice.
Nice.
You guys throwing shit.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, we have like planetary laser light shows. West Coast just has I'll Get Out shows. They just.
Dude, what? The West is sometimes rough. Those long drives, too, between cities kills me. Don't miss it. I mean, like, Sunsleeper should do more Pacific Northwest tours. But we don't because of those 8 to 10 hour guys, you know? Like, rough, man. It's rough. Get 4 hours of sleep, sleep on the side of the road. I don't know. Midwest and East Coast, it's a lot easier. Midwest, you got a few long ones to get out there, but yeah, once you're out there, there's some shorter drives and good vibes. No offense, West Coast. I love that.
And then East Coast, I mean, we're on top of each other, so.
Yes, my favorite. 3 hours.
Some of the biggest Sunsleeper things have happened on the East Coast. Like, both albums were recorded out there.
Yeah. Yeah. We're an East Coast band from the Southwest.
I mean, you're on this podcast, which is Northeast based. I mean, come on.
We'll adopt you.
Please.
So, thank you guys for joining us tonight. We really appreciate chatting with you about the new record, about kind of Sunsleeper and how they came together. And we're expecting big things from you going forward and can't wait till you make it to the East Coast.
Yes. Thank you guys so much.
Yes. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. It means more than you know.
Hell yeah.
Right on, man. Right on, guys. Awesome, dude. We loved it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Patio Slave. We are at Patio Slave on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all of the places that you can find us on social media. Facebook, Patio Slave Podcast. YouTube, Patio Slave Podcast there. Email us at patioslavepodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you want to become a supporter, click on the link at the bottom of the episode and give us a dollar, give us $5. It keeps the lights on, keeps us going. We really appreciate that stuff. Thank you.
You guys got any questions for us? I don't know, like, have you checked out the pod at all? Or
yeah. Yeah, I listened to that one all the way through with the one you guys featured us on, the album
nice.
Closers. So
how was it?
I enjoyed
it. Did
that.
You like it?
I did. It was very cool. And nice, it's honestly such a great subject matter. Album closers are a sentimental spot for me, so it was cool to be included. So
that's
you.
Awesome. That makes me happy because, I mean, that's kind of the impetus for us having them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.